Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family garden.
Wausau's own John McCutcheon getting us underway today, as he does every year at this time, for the Route 51 Garden Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, inviting you to join me in our annual sojourn down the well-trodden path to the family garden as we look forward to long summer days and a harvest of homegrown vegetables, tables adorned with fresh-cut flowers, and a yard filled with thriving, healthy trees and ornamental shrubs.
Yellow squash, black-eyed peas, Japanese kale and pinto beans, Italian tomatoes and turnip greens. Now we're picking and a-canning and a-working hard and trying to beat the winter to the family.
As always, the Route 51 Garden Show is focused on those of us who live in the often inclement climate of the northern half of Wisconsin. And our guests again this year are our two extraordinary gardening experts, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. Lynn is an orchard owner who is the former vice president of the Wisconsin Master Gardener Association Board of Directors. Nick has written extensively about gardening subjects for the Portage County Gazette and other publications. Think of this as Larry Mueller's Garden Talk, designed just for those of us who live up north, okay? So it's your opportunity to get answers to the questions about trees, shrubs, planting, and growing that may be vexing you. We want to also hear your favorite gardening stories about what gardening means to you and your family. Now, you will find it easier to get through on this show than on Larry's show with its statewide audience. So if you've got some gardening questions, we strongly encourage you to call us right now. The lines are open right now. You can always get through easier at the start of the program than later on. So if you've got questions about problems with trees or ornamental shrubs or questions about what you should plant this year in your vegetable garden or your flower garden, here's the phone number, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or if you'd like, you can put a question on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route51, and I'll read it live on the air. Well, Lynn, Nick, we survived another one, although in mid-April, I wasn't sure that we would.
It tested the northern, even the hardy northerners.
And here we are. The snow has melted, and the orioles and the hummingbirds are back, and trees are budding out, and yards are filled with dandelions once again. So away we go. So let's talk about the very late spring we had and those record cold temperatures and even a rather astounding 30 inches of snow in the middle of April. What, if anything, has that done to our spring planting schedule this year?
Well, you know, it started spring started later for us with that, of course. But one of the good things about having that much snow cover is we didn't – things weren't leafed out. So there were no buds when that cold hit. So in terms of it seems – we were talking on our way up. It seems like we are caught up, really, for the overall season. Now, May has been nice. I think April had record cold for Wisconsin, record as in 124 years. It was the coldest April, so nothing really broke its dormancy from there.
And May has been above normal,
about
5 degrees above normal in temperatures. Well, Lynn, you're an orchard owner. Mm-hmm. What does it mean for the fruit trees?
It actually was very good because, again, it didn't none of the trees budded out. The last, I would say, 2 or 3 years, they would bud out, and then we'd get that cold, and then all the petals would fall or all this, so we'd get no fruit. The trees would be alive, but we'd have no fruit. This year, nothing moved. And so now they're exploding, and now it's warm enough for the bee activity, all the things to happen, and so the pollination will be great. And so we're looking for a bumper crop.
Are they blossoming a little bit later than they did last year?
With 80 degrees yesterday, they'll blossom. There, things are really coming on time. If you have, you know, trees that are for the area that are zone 3, zone 4 trees, you know, they stay on schedule. You know, what we lost, now we're making up, because it just is growing degree days. So depending on the temperature, it'll catch up.
Are we going to have to get our gardens in a little later this year because the soil may still be too cold? Nick?
Well, again, because May is, as you mentioned, a couple degrees warmer than normal, the soil temperature is probably pretty close to on track. And we recommend that people don't put too many things in before Memorial Weekend. And I would say that holds, although as I look into the 10-day forecast, there's nothing below mid-40s for overnight lows.
But you never know when that can change on the drop of a dime.
Exactly.
1-800-780-9742 if you've got gardening questions or questions about trees or shrubs for our resident experts, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. Let's go right to the phones. Bill in Boulder Junction, you're on Route 51. Hello, Bill.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And Bill, turn down your radio, please. Bill?
Yes.
Yes, your question for Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz.
Yes, we recently bought a cabin up in Natural Lakes near Boulder Junction, and it's a 1970s place. It's set on a shelf that was cut out of a sandy clay hill, and we're looking to see, and we have some issues with some sandy and clay moving down the slope towards the house. And so we're looking to see what kind of plantings we could do, if any, to stabilize that slope. There's a natural grove of what kind of trees, hon? Of some spruce that are trying to grow there, or balsam. But we are looking for some advice on what we could plant to try and stabilize that hill.
Are you looking for ground cover or shrubs or maybe a little bit of both?
A little bit of both.
All right. Which one of you ladies want to take that one?
For me, I would say, depending on how far it's dropping, you might want to try terracing it a little bit. So you would make like steps in a terrace and then brace it so that you would have strips that you would be planting. You can get a lot of grasses coming in. You could get you want to have native things. So go out and look and see what's growing in the rest of your area that's around there, something you can get to green up really quick, because as it washes, if you try to get things in there and you get a bad rain, it's going to wash right down the hillside. So you want things you can bring in that are growing there already, that would fill in.
Okay, sounds great. So almost terrace it with not necessarily retaining walls, but at least terrace it to cut down the length of the slope.
Right, to maybe make a break. And you could even kind of like terrace it down and then maybe put like a gravel pathway kind of thing to create a drainage field that if the water would come down, it would go into that gravel. And then you would have the plants along the edges and so that it wouldn't wash.
Yeah. And is it quite shady, or is it more sunny with a few trees?
Well, the slope itself is sunny. And it's got some kind of regular grasses on it, but they're not like tall grasses. They're probably 6 or 7 inches, and once it rains, they bend over and water washes right down that grass.
Sure. Yeah. Grasses are a good choice for stabilizing your banks. So if you can look for grasses or sedges, depending sedges are better in some of the shadier areas, but low growing grasses. So everything is probably about 6 inches right now as it's growing, but you want to watch for things that get real, real tall. Prairie drop seed is an example of a clumping kind of grass that has deep roots and will hold your soil well, and it's a native.
Okay.
Well, great. Well, I appreciate the advice. Thanks very much.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. If you have a gardening question for our resident experts, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz on the Route 51 Garden Show. Let's go to John in Three Lakes. John, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. Hey, a quick question about wild berries. Our last year was absolutely dismal, and I'm wondering what your guests think, whether we might have some berries this year.
What kind of berries are we talking about? What kind of wild berries?
Well, we're talking about wild blueberries, raspberries, and then brambles or blackberries.
A lot of that'll depend on just how much rain we get. So a lot of times those kind of berries, if it gets a, that's why, like last year, we got a lot of rain, but we almost got too much rain because it was cool. You have to get the pollination going. You have to get the rainfall to make the berries head up. You know, that's what brings on wild things, is just the weather affects it. And so it depends on what kind of weather we get. If you get too much rain and it's too cool, you don't get the pollination. If it's no rain, then the berries don't head up. So it just depends on what you're getting. It could also be that where they were growing nice, maybe the canopy above has gotten too shaded. And so it might be that they're not getting enough sun. If you have a patch that's kind of always been on your property, it might be that you have to look at pruning up some of your trees a little bit, letting a little more light in there.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, John, thanks so much for the phone call. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is the Route 51 Garden Show with our perennial experts, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. And if you've got a question about gardening, about horticulture, what fruits or vegetables you might want to plant in your garden, flower garden tips, or how to keep those trees and shrubs healthy in our inclement northern climate. This is the show for you. Our lines are wide open right now. 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Susan from Eagle River called in to ask. She says, I have north-facing window boxes. What can I put in those boxes besides ivy? Any shade-loving window box plant suggestions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a great choice is coleus. And I say that because there's so many that you can choose from, different heights. Some are trailing, some are upright. So depending on what your situation is and how much you want to see through your window, consider coleus. Other good shade plants would be in the begonia family. Impatiens are also good, and that will give you color all season long.
There you go. Susan, thank you so much. Fruit trees. What kind of fruit trees can we plant in northern Wisconsin? And we all know that we've got apple trees that can grow here. But what about cherry trees? Are there any sweet cherries? What about plum trees? Peach trees and pear trees are normally further south. What are the varieties of fruit trees that you might actually be able to plant and then harvest some fruit?
Sweet cherries you'll never grow up here. They unless you really had a very, very protected spot, but most years the buds would freeze, you'd never get any cherries. The tree might live, but you wouldn't get any fruit. There are pear varieties for the northern climates. You can grow pears. You won't grow Bartlett pears, but you will grow a different kind of pear. I think Moonglow is one of the variety names. But the Extension actually has a publication that's called Fruit Production in Northern Climates. They list all of the varieties that you can grow. Plums, definitely there are northern-grown plums. But sweet cherries you won't. Peaches, no. And again, somebody might say, oh, I have one in my yard. Yeah, well, maybe one out of every 5 years you might get fruit. If you get a bad winter, it'll freeze out. So, you know, you don't want to invest that kind of money in a fruit tree and then have it die in 5 years because it froze in a bad winter.
We've got a couple of, I call them pie cherry trees. They're little sour cherries.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, for sour cherries, they're pretty darn sweet.
Right.
But
Mount
still,
Moresi,
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
is
got
the variety.
A couple of those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and they will. That's a sour cherry, but you have to know they're for pies or they're for jams or something like that. You won't be able to eat them. They're too sour. They also have a bush called a Nanking cherry, which grows in this area, and it's a shrub cherry, and that also makes little cherries that you can eat. And it's very pretty. It's a pretty ornamental shrub, too, if you never even eat the cherries, if you just want to feed the birds.
Yeah, and the birds will sometimes get them before you get them. There, if I could just add, there are several dwarf varieties that of both cherries and plums. Most of them need to need a pollinator or need two to cross pollinate. Mount Royal is a plum tree that does not, and that's hardy in zone four. Be looking for the zones. No matter who's selling, it's always a good idea to buy from a reputable nursery. But make sure you're checking for zones 3 and 4 in central Wisconsin.
And there's some of us in the northern part of the state, you need that zone 3. Zone
yes.
4 is still
yes.
Still too warm for this area. 1-800-780-9742 on the Route 51 Gardening Show. Let's go to Hank in Price County. Hank, you're on Route 51.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I live off a gravel road. I have spruce trees that line that road. They're 30 feet tall and plus. But they seem to be dying from the ground up. Is there anything that I can do to try to reverse that, or is that just something I'm going to have to deal with?
Once a spruce tree, once the branch is dead, it won't come back. You know, it won't like you can't do something to make it re-green. That part of it's dead. It sounds like maybe it's either the snow cover, something that's affecting that lower part of the branches. Some diseases of spruce trees will start from the bottom and go up. But this sounds more like it's probably just an environmental thing that is the snow cover's too deep or it's too cold near the ground or something's right in there. What you might want to do is be sure that you're clearing out any grasses or anything that might be affecting those lower branches. They're 30 feet tall, so watering them or doing that kind of thing isn't going to probably help them. They're probably set the way they are. Sometimes those kind of trees, as they mature, like you say, after 30 years, it may just be that those lower branches are dying out, and you might be able to prune some of them off and just let the upper branches fall down, you know, to cover that area back up again.
So pruning those dead branches out 3-4 feet off the ground might
save the rest of the tree. Because those branches, once they don't have any needles on them, they're never going to regrow needles. They're done. So pruning them out just gets them out of the way. And even too, sometimes people prune and then they'll plant new ones. And then that kind of makes that green along the edge. So you're like have multiple layers and then the smaller trees will grow in there and kind of fill in that area. So it doesn't look so bare.
Okay. All right. I thank you for your advice.
All right, Hank, and thanks so much for calling in. You're listening to the annual Route 51 Garden Show on Wisconsin Public Radio with our gardening experts Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is a show designed to answer your questions about gardening and taking care of trees and shrubs in our inclement northern Wisconsin climate. And if you've got any favorite gardening stories involving your friends and family, what does a garden, the annual ritual of going out in that garden every spring mean to you? Well, you can share that with us as well. So give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I'll read it live on the air. We're going to take a short break. Here's Guy Clark with his famous song about one of the only two things that money can't buy.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Moonlight, will you pardon me? Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
jazz guitarist and vocalist Nick Lucas from 1944. Yes, that's long before Tiny Tim, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 and our annual garden show, providing tips for growing flowers, vegetables, trees, and shrubs tailored specifically for our sometimes inclement northern Wisconsin climate. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our gardening experts Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz are standing by, waiting for your questions and comments at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We have wide open phone lines right now, so if you've got a question that's vexing you, you can get right on through. And try to think of this as Larry Mueller's Garden Talk, but just for the northern half of the state. You can also put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I will read it live on the air. Nick Schultz, what about winter burn? We had a very cold late spring. Is that something we need to be concerned about?
I have noticed quite a bit of winter burn that seemed to come on since the April storm. Now, April's the time when you typically would have a lot of plants breaking dormancy, so they're a little more susceptible to it. Winter burn is when your evergreens, which are green all through the winter, turn brown. And sometimes they turn brown suddenly, or maybe just on either the west or the south side of the plant where the sun is the hottest. And anyway, they'll brown up, and we can sometimes the plant is gone, and we're still at a point where I'm not sure if they can recover or not. They might be able to yet. If they aren't greening up by June, we might have lost them. If we can salvage them, try to prune them back to a green branch, to some green growth underneath the brown. So kind of shake them off and look for that green.
And another problem that we find sometimes after the long winter, Lynn Kane, is that fruit trees have been girdled by rabbits or deer. When do you know if a fruit tree is too far gone, and what do you look for in terms of that girdling to determine whether or not it can be saved?
Right. If it's girdled all the way around, generally it's going to die. And that, you know, sometimes it won't leaf out, then you know it's already gone. Sometimes it'll leaf out, and then it takes, you know, a little while, and then it browns out. And if that happens, there's nothing you can do. You just have to take the tree out. Now, if you're a grafter, which is what most trees are, you know, you can cut that off and then graft some new shoots on, and it'll start all over again as a fruit tree. It'll take several years for it to get to that point. But otherwise, you just dig it out, and you'll have to plant a new one. And then when you do plant a new one, get some good wire. Make a nice collar around that lower, and then that'll keep those rabbits from doing, because that does happen actually more times than not, that the rabbits will chew on the bottoms of them like that. And that bark is very soft on fruit trees, and it tastes good. It's nice and sweet.
Now, Dave in Wausau also wants to know about keeping rabbits and deer and other critters out of your vegetable gardens once you have a chance to plant those succulent things. Well, the critters are interested in them too. What are some tips?
A fence. A fence is the surest way to avoid critters. And if you're concerned about rabbits and sometimes voles or mice that want to get in, you'll want a fence that, for deer, you want it to be 8 feet tall if you can, because they'll jump over anything less than that. Something shorter will deter them, but won't keep the deer out. For those rodents, you need to dig deeper, about maybe 4 inches below the surface, and put in a smaller gauge wire so they can't burrow under.
So you actually put in wire or fencing under the surface,
yes,
in order to keep,
yes,
the voles,
yeah,
and the,
yeah. And in fact, which you can, some people, they're into the raised beds now. And so when you build your raised bed, then underneath you put, I think it's hardware cloth, they call it, and that you put down, so that way they can't come up under that bed and come up into the bed that way. And so, and then on top of the bed, you put the fence around, you know, and then that creates a nice high barrier.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-780-9742 if you have gardening questions, questions about what fruits and vegetables and flowers to plant this year, what would look good around your house. And and also if you've got questions about your trees or shrubs, this is the Route 51 Garden Show. And again, it is advice just for the northern half of the state. And we do have wide open phone lines right now for our guests, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, 1-800-780-9742. You mentioned raised garden beds. Tell us what those are, and maybe we can talk about some other fads. I don't want to call them a fad, but developments, new developments in gardening.
Well, raised beds are fun. You can get 2x4s, or you know, some people get into there's special treated wood that won't rot from the soil. It depends on whatever you want to do. Some people just use brick, you know, even it's anything that'll bring it up off the soil. You can make any shape you want. You can make a square. You can make 4x8 is standard. Some people make triangles and make them in a fancy pattern. It probably depends on your yard, how you want to lay it out. They can be long and skinny. They can be square. They can be any shape that you want. And then you'd fill it with some good compost. It's very good for areas that have poor soil. If your soil has been contaminated by cement or something like an old foundation, that can affect your soil. So raised beds, you bring them up. You can fill them with good compost so you have good – they're easier to keep watered. They're easier to keep weeded. You can put your mulch down, you know, and then you can control rodents, things like that. If you're – like I said, with – late blight or early blight, if you had trouble with tomatoes, you can bring in new soil, you know, that can take away those problems. So you can keep them fertilized better. So anything you want to raise it up, and that can even be a big pot. You know, some people just have a little patio. They still want to grow a tomato plant. They still want a couple pepper plants. Buy yourself a great big pot, a whiskey barrel, a planter box, anything like that that raises it up. Fill it with your own soil, your own compost, your own potting mix, and then you can still have a garden. And so it can be really wonderful.
And if you do them in containers, you can move them around the yard if you need to, depending on where the light is and what your needs are.
Or if you're going to get a bad storm, you can pull them under the eaves.
Or not to rush fall, you can also pull them in when frost threatens.
Right, so.
I do that with my herbs. I plant them in containers and boy, I can keep that tarragon and basil going right into November sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question for Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, our perennial gardening experts, here's Tanya in Stevens Point. Tanya, you're on Route 51.
Hi. So my daughter, we bought azaleas for her, and they go great in her yard, but they don't grow at all in my yard. They always die back. And I'm wondering, what is the soil conditions that azaleas like?
Azaleas like a more acidic soil. So same with rhododendrons, same with blueberries. So you often need to amend your soil to be to create that. So pH is typically in central Wisconsin is around 5.5, 6.5, somewhere in that range. And you would need it to lower it. Now, there are a few ways you can do that. As something as easy as peat moss will drop it. Pine needles will drop it. There are some products that you can buy that have sulfur in them that will lower it as well.
My hydrangeas do wonderful in my yard. So hydrangeas must take different soil than the azaleas.
They don't need it quite so acidic, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And also, I think also high organic matter. You could put a lot of organic matter in there. It's almost create an artificial soil, and that's how they will grow in there. You know, it depends on what your daughter's yard might have been a pine plantation at one time, and so it's naturally more acidic, whereas yours might have been a potato field where the you know, soil has a higher pH or a more base.
Yeah, actually, kind of hers is right in town with no pine trees. I have a ton of pine trees.
maybe yours is too acidic.
Right. And hers is in direct sun. I put mine in direct sun. Same thing. Not having any luck with those. So you're saying some sulfur.
maybe instead of raking all those pine needles off, keep the pine needles on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. And I might suggest also that you do a soil test. So and find out what you actually have there. So then you'll know how to amend it rather than guessing. Right. You know, right. Any of the things that we suggested would work, but you don't know exactly what you have. So take out borings from your soil, dig down, you know, a couple, sure, maybe 8 inches or so in a couple areas where you want to grow them. Mix it all up, take it to your extension office. They'll send it to a soil lab and tell them that it's for growing azaleas. And then they'll give you recommendations for what very specifically to do so that you can have success.
Okay. Now, can I plant, say, some blueberries and azaleas and rhododendrons all in the same area that doesn't bother the blueberries at all?
It will not. It won't bother the blueberries. And actually, you want to do this with your gardening in general. Create the conditions that your plants all like that same type of plant. So blueberries, azaleas, or rhododendrons are all very good in that same
and
mix.
Generally with blueberries, what you're going to want to do is actually like make a trench, dig it out, and then bring in all the organic matter, all your sulfur, create all that foreign, that different soil before you ever even plant your blueberries, because then they'll thrive right away and come up in that
okay,
more of environment.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Very, very quickly, Tanya.
Beets. How do you get your beets to grow, you know, nice big beets instead of, do I just have to get that soil more fluffy?
Right. Yes. Dig it. Make it very soft. Actually, they grow beets here in sand. On the sands, they grow beets. So
yeah,
the sand is very soft. So
in the central sands.
In the central sands, they do grow beets. And so, but what you want to do is be sure that your soil is very fluffy and very soft. Don't plant your seed too close together. You want them definitely spaced so that your beets can spread out. And then also, as they start to grow, you want to be sure they have ample water, because you have to realize as that beet blows up, it needs that moisture to blow it up. So as it gets hot, you know, you want it to have good fertility and good moisture so that, you know, it can create a nice piece of fruit.
Yeah, and
nice
in sandy
fruit.
Soil, it's going
to
need more water.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm continuously watering
you. Yeah. Also, thin them out as they get bigger, too, or as your plants get bigger, because that will give them room to grow under.
Sure. Now, if the beet green gets eaten off by, say, a horse or something, mm-hmm, will it come back at all or not?
I don't think so.
Pretty done. I don't
okay.
think so.
All right. Yeah. I'm the horse is getting there.
Hey, Tanya, thanks for all the great questions.
Thank you. You have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. And let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742 on the Route 51 Gardening Show. Let's go to Mark in Three Lakes. Mark, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. I have a couple of grafting questions for you.
Okay.
I have a crabapple tree doing beautifully in my yard. My parents and my family members have, like, other types of apples. Is it too late to graft this time of year? And if I graft different types of apples onto the crabapple tree, what can I expect as a fruit?
We just finished some grafting this week. You don't want it to be too hot, because so if what we did is we put our we made our grafts. Now you're grafting onto established trees, but if you had them in pots, you could put them like on the north side of the house to keep them a little cooler. The other thing is you want to keep spraying them with water to keep them moist, so that you can do that kind of grafting. Use the suckers that have come off the tree. Those are good grafting material. Now when you graft onto another tree, it's going to create whatever the graft is. It has nothing to do with what the tree is. So
okay,
the grafts will make whatever you graft it on. But it still has to be compatible with trees. So depending on what kind of apple you have, if you're grafting it onto a crab apple, it might not be compatible, and so then it may not take. But it's certainly worth a try. I mean, you haven't lost anything by doing that.
Right. Next question, I can use multiple different kinds of apple trees
onto the same crab apple?
Right.
You can certainly try it. Like I said, usually what we do with ours is we buy rootstock from, we get ours from New York State, because they have a company there that'll ship you rootstock, and then you
right.
will graft the new apples onto new rootstock, and then that makes, you know, a nicer tree. grafting stuff onto a crab apple, I'm not sure how that's, you know, whether that's going to be compatible. But like I said, you haven't lost anything. You're using your own stock. So it's all, I always like to try things and just see how they work out.
Okay. What about bare root, buying bare root plants from, you know, is there any place local in the northern part of the state where you can go and buy bare root stock for fruit trees?
Do you think Jung carries them at in Stevens Point?
Yes.
For root stocks, though?
I don't know
that
if
you're
it's
actually.
Root.
Yeah, I don't think it's root stock.
Bare root trees, yeah.
They would have the full fruit trees, bare root fruit trees, Jung's does, but bare root stock, if you're just grafting onto root stock.
No. I'm looking for bare root plants.
Right.
That they don't come in a dirt ball. They come usually in a package.
Right.
They can ship them to you, and it's just the root and the tree.
Right. And Jung's does have those, yes.
That's on the east side of Stevens Point.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time and effort.
Okay.
All right, Mark, thanks so much. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got questions for gardening, growing vegetables or flowers or keeping those trees and ornamental shrubs healthy in our inclement northern climate, this is a show for you with our guests Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Moberg. Let's go back to the phones. Greg in Stevens Point, you're on Route 51. Greg, please turn down your radio.
Hi. So in regard to Mark's question about grafting onto a crab apple, mm-hmm. I actually did that, and I had about a 30% success rate.
Okay.
Just so it can be done.
It was
multiple different varieties of apples.
Great.
But my question was about grapevines.
Mm-hmm.
So I just started a couple vines last year, and I don't know if they got hit by that late snow or what, but they didn't come back. And they were supposed to be like a more hardy variety, but they were seedless. Am I just not going to have very good success with them being seedless, or was there something I could do to, I guess, improve them?
Right. Grapevines, again, are very important to watch the zones. The more hardy they can be, I always look, again, for zone 3 because then I know they're going to be able to take any kind of winter because they're very, once they get mature, they're up in the air on a vine, and so they really get hit with the north wind. And so you want things that are very, very hardy. All my varieties have seeds in them, so I haven't seen any that are seedless that. So you have to really watch the zones on grapes. They're very, very sensitive to our winter cold. And you probably want to position them maybe in a spot in your yard that's a little more protective even than being on a where they would get hit with that north wind.
Lynn, what varieties do you grow?
I'm trying to think of the man. A lot of Minnesota, they grew a lot of Stenson, is that one of them? I've actually got them at some of the box stores. They will say right on them that they're zone 3. So you can buy them locally, but you just be sure and look at that zone and very winter hardy. Reliant, I think, maybe is one. Again, I know the Extension has a publication. And in fact, they even have a new publication they just put out all about how you can even test them to make wine. To when they're the proper maturity, so they've done a lot of testing.
And Greg, I've got a something that I know grows because I'm growing them in my backyard, and I live in the cold part of Merrill, so we're definitely zone 3. It's a variety called King of the North. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
I got them at one of the garden shops in the Wausau area. And they're very hardy. They're very prolific. I mean, they just produce more grapes than you know what to do with. They're like Concord grapes, but they're kind of small, and they've got seeds in them, and they're very tart. You know, so in fact, they're so tart that I'm the only one that can eat them. although they're really good for jam, and but King of the North is something that that's worked well for me.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Greg, thanks so much for the phone call. And you are listening to the annual Route 51 Garden Show on Wisconsin Public Radio with Lynn Cain and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Moberg, taking your questions about gardening in the northern half of the state. That's what makes our show a little bit different than Larry Mueller's Garden Talk. So if you've got questions, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. You can also put a question or comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51. The show does work best when you call in, so we encourage you to do that. And we're going to take a short break right now. Here's a song about gardening by Neil Young.
Here's a hymn to welcome in the day, heralding a summer's early sway, and all the bulbs all coming in to begin. Once upon it, yellow bonnets garland all along. You were waking and day was breaking, a panoply of song. And summer comes to Springville.
The Decemberists taking us into our final segment of Route 51 and our garden show with growing tips for our inclement northern climate. Garden talk for the northern half of the state. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our gardening experts Lynn Cain and Nick Schultz are standing by waiting for your questions and comments at 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 webpage, wpr.org/Route 51, and I'll read it live on the air. Let's go right back to the phones. We have Doug, who needs to turn his radio down.
All right.
All right, Doug, you're on Route 51.
Yes, sir. So I'm wondering about straw bale gardening and whether or not that's something that would be effective in like the zone 3. I actually live in more of almost a zone 5. But whether or not that's going to be effective with as cold as it can get, late and early.
Well, first of all, Lynn, why don't you explain to us what straw bale gardening is?
Okay, you have to get a straw bale, not hay, or it's actually a straw, and which is small grains, sticks rather than alfalfa. So you want straw. You will fertilize it for several weeks, water it, fertilize it, get it rotting, and then once it's rotted, then you start planting in it. And it's very good. It's an easy way. It's up off the ground. It warms up because you can put it anywhere in your yard that you want to. And so it works very well. What you can do is put posts around it, and then if you need to throw a blanket over it or you need to create a hoop house almost over the top of it, that would certainly extend your garden season.
Do you have to use a lot of fertilizer with that kind of gardening?
You do. You do have to do a lot of fertilizer until that straw bale is really rotting. Once it's really rotting, you know, then it's kind of providing some of the nutrient. But in the beginning, you have to put a lot of nitrogen fertilizer on to get it rotting.
And so to Doug's question, can you use that kind of gardening technique up north?
You can. And it will, because again, you can cover it if you have to. You can move it anywhere. You can put it in a spot in your yard that's very warm. You don't have to wait for the soil to warm up because the bale itself is going to be sitting right out in the sun and warm. It's going to be a lot warmer than trying to warm up soil. Some people use warm water when they're trying to get it starting, and that's warming it up as well. So, and then the fertility and the rotting of this will also warm it up. So, yeah, it would work up north.
All right. Doug, I don't know if you're driving or what
yes,
it is.
Yes, I'm driving. I do apologize. There's extra noise there.
All right. Well, did we answer your question?
Yeah. I guess the only other thing, if it's not making too much noise here, is about whether or not it, that's something that would produce enough to make it worth the effort.
Actually, they can produce a lot because you can just pack them full because you're not, as long as you're fertilizing them, you can pack them full. You can have several bales. The other thing that's nice is people don't realize it will last for at least 2 years, if not 3 years, depending on how much it's rotting. So like the second year I planted potatoes in mine, they did great. Then the third year it was rotted into this nice mound and I put pumpkins or cucumbers into that mulch and growing it, so that fertility just continues to give year after year. So
one of the things, one suggestion I would make if you're interested in doing a straw bale garden is to follow. There's a real prescriptive, it's like 21 days or something like that of things that you do to condition your bales before you plant. And it talks about how much and what kind of fertilizer and then how to water. And it's very prescriptive. You can get it, I believe it's on the Extension website, the Hort, UWEX website, and some other sources if you just want to do a search for straw bale gardening. But condition it well to get the best results.
All right, Doug, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for the call.
Yep, I know.
You know, ladies, gardening is a lot of work. You have to get out there. You have to dig up the ground. If you're just starting out, you've probably got rocks and problems. You've got clay in the soil. You have to get through the grass. And then all kinds of work and expense to finally end up with a fertile, healthy piece of ground. And then you have to deal with critters and animals and, you know, early frosts. Why do you do it? Why do you garden, Nick Schultz?
I have written about just that. It's like, why do you bother? And you didn't even mention the weeds that were chasing all season long. You know, I garden because, and actually there's a study where I just read about this study that talks about a soil, some mycorrhizum in the soil that actually is good for your health. So when you're digging in the dirt, not only does it have health benefits for you, there actually is something that does it. You know, I would tell you this. My garden needs me. Everybody's does right now if you're gardening, but I need it as much as it needs me.
Lynn Kane, why do you do it?
Same thing. It's the health benefit. You're out in the sun. You're getting your vitamin D. You're breathing in all that fresh air. So that's, you know, creating a serotonin release in your body. And you feel good. You're happy. After being locked inside all winter, get me out in the garden.
All right. Very good. Ladies, thanks so much once again for joining us. The hour has gone by much too quickly, and we really appreciate you being with us again this year.
Thank you.
It was
our pleasure.
Just a garden in the rain. But then the sun came out again and sent us happily on our way.
Diana Krall wrapping up the show for us this morning. We do want to thank today's guests, our perennial gardening experts, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jana Schleiss. Special music today by Eric Clapton, Arlo Guthrie, John McCutcheon, Guy Clark, Nick Lucas, Neil Young, The Decemberists, and Diana Krall. Next week on Route 51, we look at the reintroduction of hemp farming in Wisconsin and the line that has to be drawn between growing industrial hemp and recreational marijuana. If you missed a portion of this program, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau, and you can download it at wpr.org/route51. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.
T'was just a garden in the rain. But then
sun came out again and sent us happily on our way.